If you've ever watched, I don't know, a blockbuster film, a quick social media ad, or even just an animated logo, you've felt something, right? Instantly. Tension, maybe, or excitement. If you've ever wondered why a scene just feels tense, or why one animation sticks in your mind, you're basically picking up on a secret language. And that's what this deep dive is all about.
Exactly. And that feeling you get is never, ever an accident. Our sources today are pretty clear that every single choice a creator makes, from, you know, the shadows on a wall to the timing of a single keyframe, it's all a deliberate message.
So our mission today really is to give you the cheat code to this language. We're breaking down the three core pillars of communication in digital media. First, mise-en-scène, then audio, and finally animation. We want to show you how these three things work together to engineer a genre, to set a tone, and really to guide how you, the target audience, feel.
And understanding these concepts takes you from being just a passive consumer to an active analyst. I mean, these are the tools you need to really understand pre-production documents, or if you're a creator yourself, to build things that have a real impact.
Okay, let's get into it. Let's start with that visual foundation, mise-en-scène. We're calling this the visual storyteller because it literally defines the world we're looking at.
Right. Mise-en-scène, it's a term from theater, and it just means placing on stage.
Mm-hmm.
So in visual media, it's everything. Everything placed in front of the camera, the setting, the props, the colors, how it's all lit and framed.
Our source material gets past the basics pretty quick. You know, things like setting and location. That's just where the scene is. And props, the objects characters use.
I think we should focus on the nonverbal cues, the powerful stuff, like costume. This isn't just about clothes. It's like immediate social information. We instantly know a character's wealth or their era or social group way before they say a single word. It's visual shorthand. And it basically dictates genre. If you see a character in, I don't know, futuristic, heavy armor plating.
You don't need 10 minutes of backstory.
Exactly. The costume has already told you this is a sci-fi action theme. And that visual signaling gets a huge boost from the color palette.
And we all get the basics, right? Warm colors for happiness, cool colors for calm. But the real insight from the sources is how creators use color theory in much more sophisticated ways.
Oh, absolutely. Think about how often we see desaturated or muted colors. Creators use that to signal a kind of corporate detachment or maybe institutional coldness, even if the primary colors are technically warm ones like yellow or brown. Or think about that famous teal and orange look you see in so many modern blockbusters.
Right, that's everywhere.
It's a strategic choice. It's a complementary palette that creates a really clean visual separation between the hero, who usually have orange-ish skin tones, and the background, which is often that blue or teal. It just makes the action pop off the screen.
That's a great example of taking color theory from, you know, a textbook definition to actual practical use. But those colors are useless without light.
Huh.
So let's talk about the mood makers, lighting and composition.
Yeah, lighting is basically how you sculpt emotion with light. High-key lighting is bright, not many shadows. It signals positivity, openness. Think of a sitcom set or a friendly corporate ad. And the total opposite is low-key lighting. That's all about deep shadows, high contrast. It immediately creates mystery or horror or tension. And the key thing is just the direction of the light can make the same character look heroic or sinister or suddenly very vulnerable.
And once that light is set, composition and framing take over to control where we look. This is the geometry of the shot, right? Things like the rule of thirds are so fundamental because our brains just find that asymmetry more pleasing.
Yeah.
It's balanced. It's like the visual equivalent of a catchy song.
It's all about leading the eye. You use leading lines like a fence or a road or a hallway to literally point the viewer to what you want them to focus on. These techniques are what turn a static image into a dynamic message, especially when you add in facial expression and body language, which is so important, even in static things like toasters or storyboards.
Okay, so the visual stage is set. But to really pull the audience in, you need immersion. If mise-en-scène is the stage, then audio has to be the atmosphere that makes it feel real. And that brings us to our second pillar.
Audio, yeah. Simply put, it's any sound element used to create that atmosphere or to guide a user or just to deliver information. A product with no sound just feels broken. Audio gives it depth.
The sources break it down into five types. We all get dialogue, narration, and music, but the next three sometimes get a little blurry, even though they have really different jobs.
Let's start with sound effects, or SFX. These are usually library sounds, a gunshot, an explosion, a little click in a user interface. They're non-musical sounds that add that dramatic punch or utility. But then you have Foley. People often confuse it with SFX.
Okay, so if SFX is, say, the sound of a window shattering from a sound library. What exactly is Foley?
Foley is the art of performing realism. It's custom recorded sound effects, synchronized perfectly to the visuals, usually done live in a special studio. The source material really highlights that Foley covers sounds the mics might have missed on set, or sounds that need to be exaggerated for effect, like the rustle of cloth when someone moves, or specific footsteps. A sound designer might be in a studio walking on a concrete slab with certain shoes to match the action perfectly.
Ah, I see.
It's all about amplifying the natural physical world.
And that leaves the fifth one, ambient sound.
Yeah.
This is the background noise, right? The hum of an AC unit, a distant crowd, wind.
Exactly. It fills the space and prevents what engineers call dead air, which is something that can instantly break immersion.
Now, connecting this back, the quality of these sounds is all defined by technical stuff. The sources mention sample rate like 44.1 kilohertz for CD quality and bit depth like 16-bit. These aren't just numbers. They actually dictate the fidelity, the quality of the sound.
They really do.
So that brings up a question for me. Why would a creator ever choose to use a lower sample rate or a compressed file like an MP3 instead of a high-quality WAV?
Yeah.
Is that just a budget thing?
Not always, no. Sometimes that technical imperfection is a very deliberate creative choice. If you drop the sample rate or add some distortion, you instantly create a lo-fi aesthetic.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And that signals something raw or authentic, maybe even nostalgic. It's the difference between sterile, perfect audio and something that sounds like it's from a vintage tape deck or an old video game. The technical choice is the thematic choice.
So whether it's setting the mood in a promo video or giving you that little click sound in an app, audio is really the invisible layer that completes the whole experience. Okay, that brings us to our third and final pillar, animation, the illusion of movement.
Animation is the technique of creating moving images, digitally or physically, to communicate a message or tell a story or even just demonstrate a process. It's communication through motion. It's essential when the movement itself is the core of the message.
Let's just quickly run through the types. You've got the super smooth but very time-consuming traditional frame-by-frame animation. Then there's its modern cousin, 2D digital animation, which uses layers and motion paths. You see that a lot in explainer videos. And of course, massive 3D animation for games and films.
And you also have these specialized types like stop motion, where you're moving physical objects frame by frame, and motion graphics, which is all about animating text, shapes, and icons to convey information quickly. Think title sequences or ads.
But the real deep dive here is in the mechanics. What makes movement feel believable instead of robotic? Has to start with frame rate, right? Frames per second.
Exactly. The frame rate sets the rhythm. 12 frames per second can look choppy or stylized. You see it in older cartoons or for a specific artistic effect. 24 FPS is that classic film standard, which gives you that cinematic motion blur. And then 30 FPS or even higher is what you see in smooth digital content like video games, where clarity is everything.
And that smoothness depends on keyframes and tweening. So keyframes are the main points of an action, the start of a jump, the peak, the landing, and the software fills in all the frames in between. That's the tweening.
But the real secret sauce, the thing animators obsess over, is timing and spacing. Timing is just how many frames an action takes. Spacing is how you distribute those frames. This relationship is what controls our perception of weight and physics. So faster spacing makes something feel quick and light. Slower spacing makes an action feel heavy, powerful, or really dramatic.
So if you wanted a character to look clumsy, you'd just mess with the timing unexpectedly.
Precisely. Or if you want a heavy ball to feel heavy when it lands, you slow the spacing right before it hits, and on the bounce back up, it simulates acceleration and deceleration. And that's why you absolutely need ease in and ease out to avoid that robotic motion. Nothing in the real world just starts or stops instantly. Easing simulates that natural physical inertia.
I wonder, can easing be overused? Like, does too much smoothing make things feel unnatural in a different way almost?
Yeah.
Too slick.
It can, absolutely. If every single movement eases in and out too gently, you lose all your impact. All the sharpness is gone. Good animation balances that smoothness with sharp, decisive actions. The movement has to communicate intention clearly. And that's why you still have things like rotoscoping animating over real footage when you need perfect realism. But even then, animators apply timing and spacing to give it more punch.
Okay, let's pull all this together. We've broken down mise-en-scene, audio, and animation. The big takeaway here is that these three things are not separate. They have to work together in lockstep. Your low-key lighting needs to be supported by the right ambient sound and slow, heavy animation if you want to create a sense of dread for the audience.
every single choice we've talked about, from that teal and orange color palette to the sample rate of a single sound effect, it's all engineered. It's all there to communicate purpose and meaning, to fit the client's brief, and to meet genre conventions, which I think raises a really important question for you, the listener.
If every single element on screen is communicating something, how much meaning are you overlooking every single day? Just because those communication choices are so effective, they've become invisible.
Right. The success of a creator is often measured by how seamlessly they weave these layers together. So maybe start viewing your media consumption as more of an active analysis.
Exactly. The next time you watch something, try to actively spot the low-key lighting. Try to separate the Foley from the regular sound effects, or notice the timing and spacing in an animated logo. Once you start to see the layers, you realize you're not just watching a story. You're experiencing a deliberate, perfectly engineered emotional design.